is quite enough to contend with, without this extra emotional baggage. Tiptoeing around everyone to make sure all their wishes and wants are looked after. My family were of course gunning for me to survive, and fortunately for me they didn't interfere with my decisions, though I was sure they didn't always approve. They were expecting the disease to return, expecting to watch the car crash happen in slow motion. The medics among them had been told there was no cure and that death was inevitable. They watched silently, not sure what to say, wondering whether I might be harming myself or making things worse, hastening my demise. Chemotherapy reduced the size of tumors, agreed. It was hard to argue against it. But did it get rid of cancer? I had read that chemotherapy given to stage 4 patients encouraged the cancer to come back faster and more aggressively than before. This is because chemo and radiotherapy failed to touch the cancer stem cells. My oncologist agreed that it was a crude and blunt tool, and that it caused much collateral damage, but she had little else to offer me. How to get those pesky cancer stem cells? Would they respond to being starved? Be that cancer-starving supplements or an altered diet? So my choice was either high dose or nothing. Low dose was not even an option in 1999 and still isn't offered, despite good evidence that it's as effective and less damaging to the immune system. Cancer was an invincible foe, requiring the most barbaric of treatments, wasn't it? A full onslaught with huge potential for personal suffering. How else could it be defeated? Anything less would surely not be enough. But as much as I told myself that, another voice inside me whispered that there were options. Perhaps I could start with a high dose and taper it off. After a couple of months, maybe I could persuade my oncologist to gradually lower it if I was responding well. That seemed to be a good compromise. I might have to lay it on thick, though, complain loudly about side effects to persuade her. I knew boosting my immunity would be key to surviving. The immune system is ultimately the master controller, the final piece of the jigsaw, and it would be needed to wipe out the cancer cells naturally. In contrast, high-dose chemo was an immune system destroyer, and the statistics clearly showed it failed in every case at my stage of disease. Perhaps a reduced tumor load would make it easier for my body to cope. Even as I said it to myself, I was not convinced. Reducing the stress hormone cortisol would be essential. Raised levels suppressed lymphocytes in the gut, in an area known as GALT, the central hub of my immune cells. Intermittent fasting or reducing food quantities, I'd read, also helped immunity. On the advice of Dr. Kalubu, I dropped my food intake significantly. I finished eating for the day at 6 o'clock in the evening, although he suggested 3 o'clock, and ate a late breakfast. I added medicinal mushrooms, maitake D fraction, beta-glutens, a rice bran extract called MGN3, DHEA, and melatonin at night. All would help boost the number of natural killer cells, NK cells, in my body to help counter the immune-depleting effects of the chemotherapy. Although I was outwardly positive and upbeat, I desperately needed to address my rocketing stress levels. My constant research was taking over my life, and inevitably I'd regularly come across my deeply depressing survival statistics. No matter how hard I tried, they'd knock me back for days. I knew making it to 6 months would be an achievement. The cloak of death could descend at any moment and smother me, striking me down when I was momentarily off guard. Cancer demanded my full attention. Someone told me I would have to get through 180 dark days of the soul until I could start to come to terms with the diagnosis. Would I even get that far? My soul felt pretty gloomy already, as I peered over the edge into that fathomless abyss below. These negative feelings needed banishment. I was tormenting myself with such morbid thoughts. Cancer was all-consuming. It allowed precious little time for joy, laughter, and fun. I had read that hypnotherapy might be useful, so I sought out a brilliant hypnotherapist based in Putney. He was wonderful. After every session, he handed me a personalized tape of his treatment to play back at home. When I first started seeing him, my future timeline stopped at just 6 months. Eventually, he talked me into believing I had a future that would last years. Yes, his sessions helped me improve my diet and encouraged me to drink more. I had been very dehydrated. He also focused on the white cell army roaming my system. Through visualization, I could see those white cells as soldiers, picking off the nasty intruders one by one. As well as hypnotherapy, I also received spiritual healing from a local healer. I learned to meditate, went for walks in the park, and spent time connecting with nature. When everyone else was complaining about the wet, blustery weather, I'd wrap up warm and grin as I paced around the park, Mother Nature battering me with her awesome power. I saw beauty when everyone else saw the mundane, the twinkle of dewdrops, the greenness of the leaves, the majesty of trees and the hills, the sparkle of the spray when I was sailing. Why did everyone complain so? Why didn't people rejoice every morning to be, well, alive? It was as if the rest of the world was too busy wrapped up in day-to-day minutiae to realize what an incredible blessing it was to be part of creation. I would lie on the ground, stare up at the sky, and feel my connection to the infinite universe. How small and insignificant I was. How lucky I was to be alive. I felt reborn, like I was seeing life through the eyes of a child. Just 3 months after finding the spot of bother in my lung, I'd made huge strides. My list of supplements was growing, even if it seemed to be never-ending. I wanted the terrain, the area around the cancer cell, to be as inhospitable as possible and the rest of my body functioning as well as it could. My diet was becoming ever more extreme as I gradually added in more low-glycemic foods and took out simple carbohydrates and inflammatory foods. To my surprise, I felt less hungry on this diet, and my energy levels soared. I felt truly alive. Shopping for health foods in 1999 was another nightmare. Choice was extremely limited. Even green tea was virtually unheard of in those days. Waitresses stared at me in confusion when I asked for it in a cafe. "Do you mean peppermint?" they would ask. Ugh. I took to keeping a ready stock of tea bags with me wherever I went, along with my little sachet of pills. I was still on the hunt for supplements to lower blood glucose. It seemed increasingly clear that the medics were ignoring the obvious. Diabetic patients were a third more likely to contract cancer. They had higher insulin and higher glucose, and both fueled cancer's growth. Was I oversimplifying the problem? I didn't think so. Inner wisdom told me that perhaps diabetes medications might help control blood glucose in cancer patients too. I knew nothing about the wonder drug metformin at this point. I only associated diabetes with taking insulin. But insulin, I deduced, would fuel the fire by allowing the tumor to take up yet more glucose. This was not the answer. I wanted to pursue the natural route, supplements or a diet that might lower my blood glucose without raising insulin. It was then that I stumbled on research in a journal about an ancient traditional Chinese medicinal extract that it seemed no one else in the West was using for cancer. It would control my blood glucose and offer several other incredible anti-cancer properties. It would help with every aspect of my treatment. Chapter 7. Summoning My Inner Dragon. My discovery of berberine, a herbal extract used for centuries in China to treat diarrhea and other infections, but almost unknown in the West, came out of left field. I had quizzed my oncologist extensively about my tumor. I needed to know not only the basics of the cancer biology, but exactly how and what my tumour was made up of, the types of cells, how quickly they were dividing, my cancer's doubling time. All of this information helped me to determine I had a keratinizing tumour. Keratin is a protein found in hair, nails, and skin. It was also an epithelial cancer, in other words, a surface tumour. As I listened to my oncologist, I realized the description of my tumour had many striking parallels with psoriasis. They were both made up of squamous epithelial cells. Both involved inflammation, rapid cell turnover, and an overproduction of keratin. That was interesting. Could any psoriasis treatment be useful for cancer? I decided I'd look into it. One afternoon, I was leafing through health journals when I came across an article on psoriasis. It had been published in the Journal of Herbal Medicine in February 1999 by Dr. Meha Sukha, who trained in the Ukraine and was teaching traditional Chinese herbal medicine at the University of Westminster. He described how a particular extract from a plant was found to be effective in treating 80% of patients with psoriasis. It was called Mahonia aquifolium, and its main ingredients were berberine and berbamine. He wrote, "In recent years, scientists have discovered that the extract of the bark and root of Mahonia aquifolium contains alkaloids, which have been shown to be strong antimicrobial and antifungal agents. Berberine, protoberberine, berbamine, and oxycanthine. Cell culture studies have demonstrated that these alkaloids inhibit the growth of various tumor cells, as well as induce powerful antioxidant activity, which inhibits keratinocyte, abnormal skin cell, growth, and alleviates inflammation. The action of these alkaloids explains why Mahonia aquifolium extract has been successfully used to treat a variety of skin disorders, e.g. psoriasis, dermatitis, eczema, fungal conditions, as well as digestive disorders and blood conditions." Even more interesting, so much in there to make me sit up. It didn't just focus on the inhibition of tumor cells either. All cancer patients seem to have problems with their guts, so anything that might kill the nasties in there sounded good too. Perhaps it helped kill fungi, parasites, and other bugs. A healthy intestinal tract was of paramount importance to the immune system. Dr. Sukha went on. "Tests by US and Canadian researchers have revealed that Mahonia aquifolium is one of the top five most powerful herbal antifungal agents, and that it promotes healthy fat metabolism. Scientists at the National Cancer Institute, NIH, Bethesda, USA, have demonstrated that Mahonia aquifolium inhibits lipoxygenase and lipid hydroperoxide, and that this effect may be a crucial factor in explaining why it seems to be so beneficial for psoriasis sufferers." Wow! Clearly this was awesome stuff. More hunting about berberine unearthed a report from 1995. With mounting excitement, I read that through serendipity, researchers in Changchun, China, had discovered berberine also reduced blood sugar. The research had been led by scientist Ni Yangshi, who'd been treating diarrhea in patients with diabetes. So, it lowered blood glucose, reduced inflammation, promoted healthy fat metabolism, fought off bugs in the intestine, and fought cancer. Amazing! Exactly what I needed! The article reported the reduction in blood glucose was achieved with doses between 300 and 500 milligrams three times a day. There were no side effects at all, even with doses up to 2 grams. This was perfect, and it was good for diarrhea too. It helped gut infections as well as diabetes. I knew my gut health was crucial for my immunity, and although I didn't have diarrhea, I wanted to kill off any pathogenic bacteria that might compromise me. I wanted my immune system focused on the cancer, The full effect of Mahonia aquifolium and its berberine